231199 in the matter of the welfare of child of K.O. and D.W., Commissioner of Human Services, Legal Custodian.
All right, counsel, as you're getting settled in there, just a couple of points. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and then appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for the rebuttal. Please keep an eye on the clock. Time goes pretty fast. And you can adjust the podium. There's little buttons on, it should be on your right-hand side. You can bring it up or down to a comfortable height. So, counsel for appellant, when you are ready, you can proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Richard Snyder. I'm a volunteer attorney working for Children's Law Center and representing the appellant child in this case. Minnesota law does not authorize non-delinquent children to be detained in a secure detention facility such as the JDC, but it keeps happening. Not only to the appellant child in this case, who has been locked up at the JDC on two different occasions, totaling more than 2 months, but to other children as well. The affidavit of Ann Gwenzis from CLC described six CHIPS children being sent to the JDC by Ramsey County in 2023 alone, and a seventh who has a warrant to be sent there. 8 years ago, Hennepin County.
So can I ask you a question? Is it your argument that the statute is unambiguous, so we should apply a plain language interpretation?
Yes, Your Honor. No one is claiming that the statute is ambiguous in any way in this case.
Okay. And the statute hasn't changed in any substantive, or this is a question, has the statute changed in any substantive way as to the issues you're asking us to review here since it was first enacted in 1999?
The statute has a forerunner that existed before 1999. I think that might have been a renumbering of the statute in 1999. But there was a very substantial and relevant change that happened in 1978. That happened in 1978.
1978.
Yeah. And history is all detailed in the Hammergren decision.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that decision is the discussion of this major change. But prior to 1978, so in the 1976 version of the statute, there was an express provision that allowed detention in a secure facility such as the JDC. The language there was in the numbering at the time was 260.173 subdivision 3,
right.
1976. If a child described under subdivision 2, which is a runaway, has previously escaped from a shelter care facility, he may be placed in a secure detention facility. So that was removed by the legislature in 1978.
Which provision was removed in 78?
The provision that expressly allowed a runaway who has escaped from a shelter care facility to be placed in a secure detention facility.
Without time limitation?
Correct. And so this was the law previously, and the legislature did away with that in 1978. So we've had 45 years where this has not been an allowed practice in Minnesota.
So I'm sorry for asking these questions, but it wasn't contained in any of the briefing here, and I just started thinking about it in prepping for today. So is Hammergren was based on the pre-1978 version of the statute then?
Right. Hammergren was not based on the statute at all, but it discussed the statute.
Well, I know, the civil contempt, but it was, I mean, in a way, you know, if the statute said you can't hold kids, period, or after 24 hours, or you know, it seems that contempt wouldn't, I don't know. It seems like they would have written this a little differently if there was. That's all I'm trying to understand, what the law was that Hammergren was, what the law was in effect. Okay, go on with your argument. I'm wasting too much time on this.
The law was very similar in Hammergren, but the court wasn't applying that. It was applying a contempt statute because the issue was there was a violation of a court order, and the question was, well, can you send someone who violates a court order to a secure facility?
So is it still good law under the current version of the statute, 0.181, that civil contempt could be used to hold a non-delinquent juvenile, you know, if under egregious circumstances, and there's no less restrictive alternative? I'm just trying to understand the lay of the the lay of the land here.
Right. You're talking about two different things. So contempt is...
No, I get that, but I'm trying to understand. I mean, you're asking us for the first time to say what this statute means and that a district court does not have the authority.
Right. The district court only has the authority that the legislature has provided. In contempt situations, the legislature has provided courts with discretion to incarcerate people. And so Hammergren dealt with that situation. Under what circumstances can you apply that authority
to a juvenile?
Hammergren
is still good law.
On contempt.
On contempt. Okay. All right. That's all I was trying to clarify. Okay.
But that gets to the point.
Possibly still good law. I mean, it may be or may not.
I'm sorry.
Possibly it's still good law. With the change in the statute, I mean, there may be some argument that the court's discretion is limited as to where a child might be detained. But it's not an issue we have to resolve today.
No, that's correct. It's not an issue before the court on contempt. And contempt has its own, you know, contempt is the same across the board. A court has to apply the least restrictive way of ensuring compliance with its orders. So that's what Hammergren was talking about. But in this case, the statute does not expressly authorize confinement in a JDC. The law has changed. It's that previously existed, but it's been now removed. So, you know, you can't look anywhere here and say, yes, this is expressly authorized. What the county has been arguing is that it's implicit. And I think its argument that the implicit authority confine someone in a secure facility is rebutted by a couple different things, three things mainly. The first is it's rebutted by the text of subdivision 2 itself. The statute does use the word may, but that's not providing discretion to put someone in a locked facility. What that is providing discretion to do is to choose between the two options that are identified in the statute as dispositions in this sort of situation.
So could a juvenile be held, you know, juveniles in the circumstances, you know, of your client, be held in a locked hospital setting temporarily? Not as part of a long-term placement, but in a locked hospital setting.
Well, the two options are with a relative, and that's given priority, and then if a relative is not available, in a shelter care facility. And a shelter care facility is defined broadly in the statute. It gives the county a lot of different options. Hospitals are included within shelter care facilities, but the key definition...
It can't be a locked ward, though, under your argument.
It can't be, that's correct, because it says in a physically unrestricted setting. So if it's a locked facility, it would not meet the definition of a shelter care facility, and therefore would also not be a disposition that is authorized under the statute for temporary custody. Remember, we're talking about temporary custody here, not the permanent placement.
I understand that.
Right. So it's not, I think that the language of subdivision 2 rebuts this implicit authority argument that the county has. And then the second thing I think that rebuts this reading of the statute in a way that implicitly allows confinement is subdivision 3 of the statute as well. Subdivision 3 isn't applicable to the appellant in this case. It's applicable for a child that is a CHIPS child because they've been adjudicated to be a runaway or habitual truant, that sort of thing. So it's a conduct-based CHIPS determination. The appellant in this case isn't a CHIPS child because of conduct. It's because of his family situation. So he has become a ward of the state under the guardianship of the county.
But where do you get in subdivision 3 that it's because the juvenile has done something? And I will say, based on your statement of facts, you know, the juvenile in this case has, you know, got a history there.
Yeah, that's correct. It has not been adjudicated or alleged to be delinquent because of any such conduct. So it's background facts for the court, but it's not the basis for why this it was a CHIPS child. But the point of this, though, is that you look at subdivision 3, and for a kid who is a runaway, the subdivision 3 says he can be placed only in a shelter care facility. It doesn't even give the option of going anywhere other than that.
So is subdivision 3 just a limitation on subdivision 2, the option with the relative?
Right. Subdivision 2 provides two options for someone who doesn't have this conduct-based CHIPS status. And the two options are with a relative or in a shelter care facility. And subdivision 3 then takes away one of those. So it doesn't...
It doesn't modify subdivision 1.
No. Subdivision 1 really stands on its own because it's a 24-hour period. So once you're past the 24-hour period, we're into subdivision 2, and that's a statute that provides the two alternatives. And, you know, the word may is not opening up all other possible alternatives. I mean, there would be no limit, I think, at that point in time. And that's clearly not what the legislature intended. It didn't intend to implicitly permit something that back in 1978 it said expressly you cannot do any further, incarcerate a non-delinquent child.
If we go down this path, are we opening up the door for the county to say, okay, if we can't hold you at the JDC, but you're still running away, we're going to start to fine the juveniles in contempt? And we're going to start to find the juveniles are delinquent for violating court orders. I mean, and then we're now building a record on a kid that the county's just trying to get placed. I mean, is that the end result? Is that where this could lead to?
I'm not aware if courts are using contempt power in these sort of situations or not. But
well, they're not now because they're holding the kids in the JDC. Right. But like, and they can't run. But if the kids are running in violation of the court's order, then we might be in the Hammergren world where we're talking about contempt and then you can hold them in the JDC.
Right. And Hammergren, the language of the opinion says this is really, this is for the extreme case. And it's only if all other alternatives have been tried and have failed and you have told the child that this would be a likely result, so there's a warning. So, I mean, there are some safeguards built into it.
Well,
I think you're right. It could be a situation where a court ultimately turns to that as an option for detaining a child. But it can't turn to the statute because that's not an option under the statute.
Regarding whether Hammergren, now it's true that Hammergren was addressing the statute as it existed before 1978. But it was decided in 1980, so presumably the court was well aware that there had been a statutory change. So
yes.
I would assume if the court knowing that the court was intending to limit in Hammergren its decision to circumstances that applied only to the previous statute, it would have probably said so. It would have indicated that, you know, there's been a change in the statute. But for this case, because we have no limit, no 24-hour restriction that we will now have in the future, we're applying it in this case. Do you see? You understand the question?
I think the not entirely. I think the Hammergren Court refers to the to the change in the law, because the change in the law happened by then.
Right.
And it referred to the change in the law to promote the public policy of Minnesota, to say this is the public policy of Minnesota to not incarcerate children. So when we do so under contempt power, we've really got to limit that. And I think that's the message that's coming out of the case, that it's really the extraordinary case that would, because we have this policy, that we're not going to be incarcerating non-delinquent children.
All right, thank you.
I have the mootness argument. We can address, too, if the court has any questions on that, or I can address it on rebuttal. I think my time is just about up, so I will sit down at this point unless the court has additional questions.
I do have one question. What's your position as to whether, regardless of how we decide this case, whether it be a precedential decision?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. I this should be a precedential case because there's 87 counties in Minnesota. We know Hennepin County has stopped this practice, and it has stopped this practice because it has concluded that it's not in the best interest of children to incarcerate them. These are kids that have had trauma in their life, that got that kind of into the system in the first place. That's exacerbated by the fact that they're removed from their family, and now you're going to incarcerate them. And Hennepin County has made the decision that that only piles trauma on top of trauma and is not in the best interest of the children.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And then counsel for respondent, when you're ready, you'll have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Thompson, and I am representing here today the Ramsey County Social Services Department. I do not have much to add to our written briefing and arguments. I would like to highlight a couple of things for the court and clarify a few things as well. First, we are reiterating our request that this court dismiss the appeal as moot, as was previously briefed. Secondly, in addressing the merits of this issue, I would like to point out a few things for this court. I want to shed some light.
If we were to agree with you, how would this issue ever get to the courts? I mean, it seems like a situation that would evade review otherwise.
And I understand that concern. I think in this particular circumstance, Your Honor, the exception to the doctrine with regard to evading review is that it must be an urgent matter in this matter, and that it must still be an issue at controversy for the particular person appealing, if I recall correctly. And so in this particular matter,
it seems
the juvenile...
based on this juvenile's history that this could well happen again. It's happened many times where the child has been on the run from various placements.
And twice incarcerated, right?
He has. Prior to this time we're here discussing on appeal, there was one other time that he was at the GDC. Yes, Your Honor.
So why doesn't this appear to be a repetitious circumstance that fits the exception that you're referring to?
And I think that the difference now being that he is in the residential treatment program that the agency had been working to get him in, and he is now receiving the treatment and services that he needs, and it is anticipated to be a fairly lengthy program. And that is different from the circumstance
from which
previously.
From which he might run.
I suppose that is always a possibility, Your Honor. It's a very structured, supervised program. He has been there without issue at this time.
My concern is that, I mean, I know the focus is generally on the actual parties, but if this is a practice, as it seems to be in some counties, and it almost always going to be the case that by the time you get to appeal, that the matter's at least temporarily resolved for each juvenile in each case. So it's sort of a whack-a-mole. We never get the opportunity to address the issue of law, which seems to be a rather significant issue, if in fact, I mean, answering the question of whether the statute allows the counties to do something that that at least arguably is expressly prohibited by the legislature.
And I think that this court wants to get to the merits of this issue. That is certainly warranted. I think that this is a question that counties would appreciate some guidance from this court on. As we laid out in our briefing, Your Honor, I do believe that the district court relied on a plain reading of the statute and that the statute is unambiguous, allowing the district court discretion in determining these placements.
Well, let's go to that. The emphasis in your brief on the notwithstanding language in subdivision 2, I don't know. It seems as if you're reading that to mean that subdivision 1 doesn't matter. The express prohibition, you know, the limitation on the shall be detained no longer than, seems to be eroded completely by your interpretation of what you're asking us to do with the notwithstanding language.
And I think, Your Honor, there's a couple of things in 181 that the court looks at the district court looked at to rely on this interpretation. One, as this court is pointing out, the subdivision 2 saying notwithstanding the provisions of subdivision 1. However, also in subdivision 1, that last sentence indicates at the end of the 24-hour detention, any child requiring further detention may be detained only as provided in this section. So I think even subdivision 1 is acknowledging that there may be further detention of a child and that that is to be accomplished by subdivision 2 or subdivision 3. Then if you look at subdivision 3, as counsel was noting, that is the subdivision that is in response to the runaway youth being held in secure detention. That is the one that has been changed and says that that is only to be in a shelter care facility. And that's related specifically to youth who are pled specifically under 260C07 clause 13 and 14. And those clauses are specifically only that the youth has run away from home or that the youth is a habitual truant. And those are the ones that have that specific limitation to only shelter care facilities. So the rest of our child protection youth that we are working with in these cases, after that 24-hour period, may only be detained as further provided in this section. We then look to subdivision 2.
Well, I will tell you, when I read subdivision 2, it was, and you can disabuse me of this and convince me I'm wrong, it read to me as appellant is arguing it reads, notwithstanding the limitations in subdivision 1, if the child, and it gives you the specific application of subdivision 2, then it's least restrictive, and it may be with A or B, relative or shelter care facility. I didn't read it as the broad exception that you're suggesting, and if can you point to some language that would in subdivision 2 or subdivision 1 that would support that proposition, your proposition?
And again, Your Honor, I believe, again, that last sentence in subdivision 1 saying that the child requiring further detention may be detained as provided in this section. And then the way in which subdivision 2 is written, that is what we are pointing to, and that is what the district court relied on in making its decision. In that subdivision 2, if you look, it's saying pursuant to 260C175 and refers to those clauses. If you look at that, Your Honor, the clause under which this particular juvenile was picked up and held at the JDC, then 175 refers to 154. And 154 is specifically for failure to obey, summons, contempt, and the last sentence of that says, in any case when it appears to the court the service will be ineffectual or the welfare of the child requires the child be brought forthwith into the custody of the court may issue a warrant for immediate custody of the child. So that's the circumstance under which SWO came to be at the juvenile detention center. The court had issued that warrant saying that child must be brought into the immediate custody of the court. Then as we look at the reading of...
I'm sorry. Can you repeat which section? 260C.
260C.154, Your Honor.
154, that's what I said, yeah.
Then as we look at subdivision 2, and specifically the way it is written, Your Honor, it says the child shall, so that would be requiring, be detained in the least restrictive setting consistent with the child's health and welfare and in closest proximity to the child's family as possible, period. I believe that the way the statute is currently written, that is the guiding mandate to the district court in determining the child's placement, temporary placement under this subdivision. The statute does go on, as the court was indicating, placement may, and again, now we're differentiating here because we're using the permissive may be with a child's relative or if no placement with a relative in a shelter care facility.
Aren't those the only two options?
Well, Your Honor, as is pointed out in some of our briefing, and I want to clarify some things for the court today with regard to that, there are many options available to the district court in a child protection matter for temporary placement of children. In addition to a...
But I'm talking about the language here. I mean, doesn't the language here suggest... I mean, you may go to the ground floor using the elevator or the stairs. Those are the options. I mean, it doesn't imply that there's some other allowable access point.
And I think that in reading the 181 as a whole, Your Honor, I do think that what Subdivision 2 indicates is that the district court does have some discretion in making that placement. It does not include the language shall.
Usually if the legislature wanted to do that, it would say placement may be in any number of facilities, including, and then you might have two things listed. But here it's maybe, and then you have the what seems to be an either-or option. I formed that in the form of a statement, but it's really a question. It sort of states my impression that I'm hoping, if you think I'm wrong, that you'll convince me of it.
And, Your Honor, I think the district court was relying on the fact that that first sentence ends with the least restrictive placement available. And that giving the court the options, the may's being permissive, and that it does not include shall, it does not include the only, which it includes in subdivision 3. And that so when you look at this statute as a whole, as well as the broad way we read child protection statutes in order to effectuate the best interests of the child, and that the district court is always charged with making particular, individualized findings of facts in relation to each individual child and their placement.
But isn't the juvenile detention center just as being the least restrictive alternative, if we were to accept your interpretation, is because the county has failed to provide an alternate setting that may work? I mean,
thank you for that question, Your Honor.
So it's the juvenile that's being punished for the shortcomings of the county, then.
Your Honor, the facts of this case, I think, speak very clearly to the fact that social services has been working unceasingly with regard to SWO and his needs and placements for years and years.
Yeah, no, and we acknowledge that, and the district court judge, certainly in reading the transcript, et cetera, I mean, the district court judge had the child's interests, I mean, utmost, so this is not about, that.
And I think that is also the interest of the social workers. This is not about convenience. This is not about being lackadaisical with regard to a placement for SWO. This is about the fact that temporarily holding him at the JDC when a residential treatment placement that everyone desperately wanted him to be placed in to address his ongoing chemical dependency, his mental health, get him stability, things he very obviously desperately needed, and the agency had been working hard to find and secure this placement for him, and they had it. But they had to actually get him there. And we wish we could control the admissions to these residential treatment facilities, but unfortunately the agency cannot, and they're at the mercy of the residential treatment facility saying, the spot is now available. So at the time he was initially held, I believe the spot was supposed to be available within 2 weeks. Unfortunately, that admission got pushed back 2 more weeks because they had not yet discharged the youth who was there.
So following up on a question Judge Schmidt asked appellant. Could the court, I mean, if we were to accept the interpretation being asked of us by appellant, could the court then just use its contempt powers as long as it was, you know, the most egregious circumstances and the least restrictive, you know, so that the requirements of Hammergren were met?
Could the district court use...
just say you were ordered to stay in this foster placement. You didn't. You're in contempt until we can... We're keeping you at the JDC until another placement opens up.
Well, and I think, Your Honor, that's the use of 260C.154 and the warrant to bring the child into immediate custody is how the district court accomplishes that and did in SWO's case.
Can I ask you a question? It's going back to the statutory language. I don't know if you have it in front of you, but subdivision 1, what do you take the word may to mean in subdivision 1? A child taken into custody pursuant to 260C.175 may be detained for up to 24 hours in, and it gives a list. What do you take the word may to mean in that? Do you see that there's... Do you believe that statute suggests that there are other facilities other than those that are listed as options for detention?
Your Honor, I think that what that is saying is that the court may detain. So again, I think the court does not have to detain in that way, but what that statute is saying is that the court does have that option, that they may do that.
But it's a limitation, isn't it? I mean, it may be detained for up to 24 hours in the following facilities. In other words, you may not detain for up to 24 hours or more than 24 hours in any of these facilities. Do you agree with that? The reason I ask that is that that's the same language that's used in subdivision 2 in the language that you say is just permissive. Placement may be with the child's relative, or if no placement is available with the relative in a shelter care facility. I'm suggesting that the parallel suggests a limitation in subdivision 1, and that same language, that same construction is used in subdivision 2. So if there's a limitation implied in subdivision 1, it seems as if the parallel language would imply a limitation in subdivision 2. Correct me if you think I'm wrong about my construction and the parallel construction.
Your Honor, I have always read, and as I'm looking at it now, that the may in subdivision 1 is that they may be detained. The may is giving the court the discretion to detain the child. In subdivision 2, the may is related to placements. And the may is saying where the child could possibly, the options the court, the discretion the court, with relation to the placement.
But if I could, may I? The may language seems to be specific as to location. May be detained for up to 24 hours in a shelter, secure facility, or if there's no secure detention facility available in jail. In subdivision 2, placement may be with the child's relative or, again, location, or if no placement is available with the relative in a shelter care facility.
And I would just point the court to the sentence before that in subdivision 2, and I think that is what guides the court in determining the placement, is that it has to be the least restrictive setting to meet the child's needs.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just to touch very briefly on the mootness issue, there are the three exceptions to mootness, and the one I think that's best with this one is the exception for functional judiciability, and that is applicable in situations like this where record is fully developed. It's a legal issue, and it has important statewide significance. So it's unlike the capable of repetition yet evading review. It really focuses less on how the decision might affect the particular appellant as opposed to others in the state that may be affected by the outcome of this and may benefit by the outcome of the decision. So we think that's the most close fit as far as the exceptions go. State versus Rudd is a really good example of that, where a decision is going to benefit others, not necessarily the party in the case. And it makes sense to go ahead and resolve it. I mean, this issue is going to come up at some point. I think Your Honor is right. If it's not this case, it's going to be some other case, and it's going to come up maybe on an expedited emergency basis. So this is the opportunity to resolve this issue based on a full consideration of the issue.
So following up on Judge Ross's question about subdivision one, so if the May in subdivision two says you can only place a child with a relative or in a shelter care facility, so does the May in subdivision one say the district court has to detain? I mean, they don't have a choice not to detain a child that's been brought before them pursuant to section 260C.175?
I think that language is applicable to the police bringing the child in, too, if the police pick someone up. So there's an option here for this 24-hour period immediately after someone is picked up on what can be done with the child. And so these are the options. These are the options that may detain that person in. It doesn't require that someone be detained in these particular ways.
In other words, if the decision is made to attempt to hold the child for 24 hours and there's a basis to do it, these are the only locations where the child may be detained.
Right. There's no reason the child couldn't be returned to his home either. Right. So I don't think that May has
so
a really.
So you're saying it's law enforcement that makes that decision? How does or is it the county social workers or?
Well, I think
I'm a little
confused. Yeah, I think 175.
Because somebody has to make a decision on where. And yeah, so is it the court at that point or is it pre-court, presumably?
There's going to be no hearing within that 24-hour period. So this is the section that's dealing with the extrajudicial disposition of the child during that 24-hour period until a court hearing can be held. And so it's section 175 that talks about the apprehension of a child and what can be done. And it talks about these options. And it has to be consistent with 181, then, whatever is done. So I don't think that particular may affects this decision at all. I think in subdivision two, the one we're talking about, the may is coupled with the word or, which is, again, designating it's this or this. It's not this or anything else. It doesn't have that non-exclusive language that you see in other parts of the statute, like in the definition of shelter care facility, which can be, among other things, a hospital, foster care, et cetera, et cetera. I would agree that, this case is not about bad intentions. Everyone here is operating with good intentions. It's about authority. It's about the authority of the court to act. And has the legislature provided the court with authority to do this? And the answer to that question is no, which is why the district court's order in this case needs to be reversed, because the court did not have authority to order the incarceration of the child in this case. So we ask that the court reverse the decision. We also ask that it be a published opinion because it's going to be beneficial elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for the help you provided today, both at argument and also in your briefs. We will get a decision out in the statutory time frame.